Thank you so much for joining us. First of all, thank you to Rabbi Eisenstein, who's visiting us from Eretz Yisrael, from Yerushalayim. I thank him for taking out of his busy schedule to come and share his very meaningful Divrei Torah with us. I would also like to thank Max Spector, who does not want to be thanked, but he's really the only reason why this evening happened. He put it together from beginning to end, and he is solely responsible for this evening's program. Thank you as well to all those who are involved in College Torah, which was always an amazing program that we're just trying to get back into once again. And I appreciate all of you who have come out to participate in this evening's shiur. Rabbi Eisenstein will speak more about the Divrei Hashkafa that will get us in the mood for Tisha B'Av and the 9 days. I wanted to talk a little bit more Divrei Halacha, just by way of introduction. We have a Gemara where the Gemara tells us very openly that there seems to be some parallelism between a Beis HaKnesses and the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara tells us in Megillah Daf Chavtes, Ve'ehi lahem le'migdash ma'at, the Navi Yecheskel. Now when did the Navi Yecheskel live? Also in the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And the Navi Yecheskel assures us and he says, Ve'ehi lahem le'migdash ma'at, it's very befitting that it's the Navi Yecheskel who shares these words with us, because after all, he's living at the time when there's no longer a Beis HaMikdash, and the people of his generation are petrified. What's going to be? This was the focal point. This was the centerpiece of our lives. And here we are now. Everything is going to be gone. What's going to be our connection to the Ribono Shel Olam? What are we going to do now? And he comes and he reassures them by telling them, Ve'eilam le'migdash ma'at, says the Gemara, Eilu bate knesios u'bate midrashos. He calms them down and he says, you have nothing to be afraid of. You have nothing to be concerned about, because you still have the opportunity to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam in a Beis HaKnesses or in a Beis HaMedrash. And that's what the Gemara tells us are the parting words of Yecheskel HaNavi, that you should not be afraid, because there always is that opportunity. There always is that ability to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam. Rav Asher Weiss pointed out to me recently that it's fascinating to think about the fact that in the olden days there was no Beis HaKnesses. You see, now we live in communities where most of our focus revolves around the Beis HaKnesses or Beis HaMedrash. Nobody would ever move to a community where there was no Beis HaKnesses. That's not an option for us. Nowadays, this has become so much a part of what we take for granted. But in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, before the Anshei Knesses HaGedolah, he suggested, there was no institution of a Beis HaKnesses, because there was no reason for it. There was no tefillah like we have today. There was no need for Baruch Hu, for Kaddish, Kedusha. There was no need for a minyan. We didn't have all these institutions, and therefore a Beis HaKnesses is something that never existed. The first reference that we have to this idea of a Beis HaKnesses is in the days of Yirmiyahu. And we know from history that Yirmiyahu is the one who was also one of the great Nevi'im, one of the Nevi'im Achronim who lived at the time of the Tkuf of the Bayis Rishon, and he lived through the Churban. And at that time of the Churban HaBayis and Galus Babel, Yirmiyahu HaNavi is also the first one who tells us about the fact that we now have an institution of a Beis HaKnesses. I believe it's not a coincidence that here we have the Navi Yecheskel reassuring us after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And we have the Navi Yirmiyahu who tells us as well in his Nevuah at the time of Churban Bayis Rishon that the Beis HaKnesses is the place to go. So the Pasuk says in the Navi Yirmiyahu, Ve'ez Beis Ha'am Sarfu HaKazdim Ba'esh, which is the first reference Rashi there tells us in Yirmiyahu, Elu Batei Knesios. So it seems that that was the tkufa, that was the time where Batei Knesios got started. And since then it has become such an important and central focus of our Jewish community. And it's something that I'd like to spend the evening tonight discussing a little bit about the halachos that connect the Beis HaKnesses and the Beis HaMikdash. The Mikdash Ma'at is only the miniature Beis HaKnesses, is considered the miniature Beis HaMikdash, but there are many halachos that govern the connection between these two. There is another point to be aware of, and that is the Yalkut Shimoni writes that when we think about the story of Bilam HaRasha, what exactly was Bilam HaRasha asked to accomplish? What was he hired to do? So the Yalkut Shimoni tells us that Bilam HaRasha was asked to curse and to destroy the Jewish people. In the end, as we know, it didn't turn out as planned. And Bilam HaRasha was not able to do what he wanted to do. He was not able to accomplish the destruction of the Jewish people. And we're told that Bilam HaRasha in the end says, Matovu Ohalecha Yaakov Mishkan Osecha Yisrael, how beloved, how beautiful it is, the Jewish community that has Mishkan Osecha Yisrael, that has a place of worship like a Beis HaKnesses, like a Beis HaMikdash, something of that nature. So the Yalkut Shimoni tells us the following, Mibirchosav Shalosa Rasha, from ultimately what Bilam ended up saying, which was Matovu Alecha Yaakov, Atalamed Mahaya Balibo. You can learn from that what it was that he originally had in mind, because the Ribbono Shel Olam flipped the klala that was supposed to come about from Bilam into a bracha. And therefore says the Yalkut Shimoni, Bikesh Lomar, what did Bilam HaRasha want to say originally? What was the curse that he was going to put upon the Jewish people? Lo yehei lahem bati knesios abati midrashos. My curse, says Bilam, is that the Jewish people should not have the ability to construct bati knesios and bati midrashos. And in the end, he ends up saying the flip side, which is Matovu Ahalecha Yaakov, how blessed we are that we have the opportunity to enjoy the space of a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMidrash. Now you think about that. If Bilam was hired to destroy the Jewish people, why is he focusing his attention on the Beis HaKnesses and the Beis HaMidrash? Why doesn't he curse the Jewish people? Why did he want to say, Lo yehei lahem bati midrashos abati knesios? And what's clear, what's apparent from the Medrash is that the continuity of the Jewish people is dependent on places like a Beis HaMikdash or a Beis HaKnesses. Bilam knew good and well, better than sometimes we know ourselves, that the only way we can have a thriving Jewish community is if we focus and we give the requisite attention to a Beis HaKnesses and to a Beis HaMedrash. If we offer the kavod that it deserves, if we treat it the way it's supposed to be treated, only then will the Jewish people have a chance of survival. And Bilam knows when he's asked, when he's entrusted with trying to destroy the Jewish people, the one thing that he has on his mind to say is, I'm going to destroy them by getting rid of their ability to rally around a Beis HaKnesses or a Beis HaMedrash. And that gives us a little bit of an idea of how important a Beis HaKnesses is and how much we need to think about what our relationship with a local Beis HaKnesses is, how much we invest in a Beis HaKnesses, how much time do we spend? Are we running in? Are we running out? Or is it something that we say to ourselves, Shifti b'veis Hashem kol yimei chayai. This is a place that I always want to find myself in. This is a place where I feel comfortable in. This is my home because this is where the Shechina is and this is where I have the opportunity to connect with Him. In the absence of a Beis HaMikdash that we do not have, unfortunately, today, we at least are left with what we call a Mikdash Ma'at. And here the Navi tells us in Sefer Yecheskel, the Ribbono Shel Olam promises us, Ve'ehi lahem le'mikdash ma'at. I will be there. I will be there, like the Mishnah tells us as well. When you have 10 people that gather together, and they're mispalel, if you have 10 people that are coming together, the Ribbono Shel Olam is there, the Gemara tells us. And He comes and He shows up every time we show up. Every time we have a minyan that's supposed to get together and daven. Every time we reach out to Him, the Gemara tells us, He is there holding our hands. He is there with us as well. And that's something that should give us a perspective of how important and how central a Beis HaKnesses is. So let's talk a little bit about, in the few minutes that we have, about the Beis HaKnesses and about the connection that we do find in Halacha to the Beis HaMikdash. So number one, we do have a discussion whether, the Rishonim discuss, whether or not we should assume that the sanctity, that the consecration that is infused into a Beis HaKnesses is the same as the Kedusha that is infused into a Beis HaMikdash. Should we assume that this is a biblical Kedusha? Should we assume that a Beis HaKnesses has Kedusha for all intents and purposes like a Beis HaMikdash would have? Obviously not to that level, but something like that. Or should we assume it was something that was instituted later on, that the Chachamim were matil a Kedusha into the Beis HaKnesses? That is a discussion amongst the Rishonim. And either way, we assume that a Beis HaKnesses certainly has Kedusha. Either it's a Kedusha that is encompassed in the idea of Umikdashi Tiro'u, which is that we have a mitzvah collectively to show our honor, to display our kavod for the Beis HaMikdash, our yira for the Beis HaMikdash, and so too that spills over, some Rishonim say, to a Beis HaKnesses as well. Which means we have to think about that. When we walk into a Beis HaKnesses, it means we're in some way walking into a Beis HaMikdash. It might be under that original category of Umikdashi Tiro, the same rules that govern, in some way, the Kedusha, the Kavod, the Mora that we need to have when we enter the Makam HaMikdash, need to also be there when we walk into a Beis HaKnesses. And unfortunately, part of our challenge is that we've become so used to visiting a Beis HaKnesses. It's become so routine for us. And that's part of the great challenge. The Malbim writes in his commentary on Tanakh, the Malbim writes that we have what is seemingly a great discrepancy. Very shortly we're going to start saying L'David Hashem Oriv Yishi. And the Malbim points out that we have two psukim, one right next to the other, that seem to be contradicting each other. In one pasuk, we're told, "Achashalti me'es Hashem osa avakish." There's one thing I want, and what is the one request that we should all have in life? Shifti me'es Hashem kol yemei chayai. I want to have the opportunity to live in God's home my entire life for all of my existence. And yet, very shortly afterward, we're told, "Lachzos benoam Hashem ulevaker beheichalo." Points out the Malbim. You want to be someone who's a mevaker? You want to be someone who's just visiting? You want to be someone who's just transient? Or do you want to be someone who is shivti beveis Hashem, someone who's there all the time? Which one is it? What are we looking forward to? What are we asking for? And the Malbim says, in essence, we really request both. Because part of the challenge of somebody who is an Eved Hashem is that we have a routine, that there are things that we do very often. And sometimes we develop a sense of callousness. We develop a sense of insensitivity because we don't really appreciate that which we're involved in all the time and every day. We walk into a Beis HaKnesses. We have the opportunity to connect ourselves with the Ribono Shel Olam every day of our lives. It's not something that means as much to us as it should. And therefore we ask the Ribono Shel Olam for a twofold bracha, and that is, we want to be inhabitants. We want to be Shivti Beveis Hashem Kol Yemei Chayai. I want to have that opportunity to be a permanent resident of a place like this. But I also want to always have the perspective of Lachazos Benoam Hashem Ulevaker Beheichalo. I should always have that sensational feeling every time I walk into a shul. Every time I walk in and I understand this is what I'm here for. I'm here to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam and it means something to me. And it's going to make a difference in my life. This is what we ask for, and it's not something that comes by itself. It's something we need to work at because it's an incredible challenge. It's not easy at all. I was always very moved when reading the words of the great Eish Kodesh, the Piazetzner Rebbe, where he says almost a public confession. He writes a public letter to the Ribono Shel Olam, and he publishes this letter in the Sefer Tzav Vezirus. And it made such an impact on me, I memorized the words because I was so moved by his words. And he says, Ribono Shel Olam, ma'uchal teis lecha. What can I possibly give to you? Here I am at the very end of my life. He ended up losing his life, al kiddush Hashem. But here I am, and there's no regrets that I have. I've done everything exactly the way I would have otherwise wanted to do them. There's nothing in my life that I have regrets about. Lilmod, do you think I have any regrets about the way I learned? Hari ani lomed b'chol kochi. From the day I had the ability to learn Torah, I studied the Torah with all of my heart, with all of my soul. I gave you everything I had. Lihispalel, do I have any regrets about the way I supplicated myself before you, the way I was mispalel, the way I communicated with you? No. Hari ani mispalel b'chol kochi. I've given everything I have to give of myself to you and to have a connection with you. And then he writes in the end of that letter, if there's one thing I have regrets about in my life, if there's one thing I could only do again, it would be the following. Rotze ani lehisgayer. If I only had the ability to be a convert and to develop an appreciation for every mitzvah that I'm engaged in and to have an understanding that every single time I connect with you, it's something special and it's something unique. And it's something I should never take for granted. Look at a convert, the first time they perform mitzvahs. Look at the perspective that they have. Look at the kavod they give to the mitzvah. Look how much they're so excited about every time they come to daven, a bal tshuva or a balas tshuva. Look how much they appreciate those opportunities and those experiences that so often people who grew up with it do not have the ability to appreciate. And that's what he writes. It is his only regret in life. If only he had the ability. Halavai v'yecholti lehizgayer. If only I had the chance, if only I was given the ability to come into the world again and develop my own appreciation for what a mitzvah means to me, for what it means to be in a Beis HaKnesses. And I think about this every day when I come to shul. Halavai v'yecholti lehizgayer. We all have that challenge. We come to shul all the time, but we lose the sensational feeling that this is a Mikdash Ma'at, that this is really what we're doing. We're visiting the Ribono Shel Olam. The Shechina is here. It's undoubtedly here. But how many people feel that? How many people appreciate that? And it's nobody's fault. It's just so difficult because we're Shifti Beveis Hashem Kol Yemei Chaya, because we're here all the time and we've become accustomed to visiting a place like this. This is our home, which is a beautiful feeling to have. But at the same time, we need to keep in mind this tefillah. Halavai v'yecholti lehisgayer. If only I would have the ability to come back and just feel that sensational feeling. Levaker beheichalo. to have the understanding and appreciation for what a Beis HaKnesses means to us and how careful we need to be whenever we come to a Beis HaKnesses. So we have a halacha. We have a halacha where we're told that there's a prohibition to destroy a part of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's something the Gemara tells us we learn from a pasuk, Lo sasun kein l'Hashem Elokeichem. When we come to Eretz Yisrael, we have an obligation to destroy all of the Avodah Zarah that might be strewn about in the land. But when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, when it comes to the property of the Shechina, the Gemara says, the pasuk tells us, Lo sasun kein l'Hashem Elokeichem, means you cannot do to the Beis HaMikdash what you otherwise would do to all the places of Avodah Zarah, of idol worship. And from there we learn that it's usher to destroy any part of a Beis HaKnesses or any part of a Beis HaMikdash. There was a famous discussion that Rav Moshe spoke about. Rav Moshe Feinstein discussed that there were those who went to visit the old city and they wanted to take back something to have a zikaron, to have some sort of memorial over the fact that they took a big trip. So they would knock off, chip off a piece of the kotel and bring it home with them. And he says there were those who believed that this was going to be something that perhaps would be a segula for somebody who might be ill, for somebody who might be sick. You put it under the pillow, you put it near the bed, and people thought that might be helpful to have the person be granted a refuah. And Rav Moshe goes all out against such a practice, and he says, number one, and most primarily, this is the open violation of Lo sasun kein l'Hashem Elokeichem. We have no right to destroy any property of the Beis HaMikdash. This is not ours, and we don't have a right, even if you have the most noble of intentions. Nobody gave you the right to do such a thing. And from here we learn as well, the Rishonim say, that one has the same prohibition to do that in a Beis HaKnesses. One is not allowed to damage any part of the Beis HaKnesses or take anything away from the property of a Beis HaKnesses, which means that not only do we violate the Isser of Gezel if we damage the property of Hekdish, if we damage the property of a Beis HaKnesses, but it also means we violate a second violation, a second prohibition as well, which is the Isser of Lo Sasun Kein L'Hashem Elokeichem. I remember when I was a child, it wasn't that long ago, that we had kids in our class who used to go in the shul where I grew up. They used to go, let's say when we would daven mincha as kids, they would take a little coin and scratch their names into the wooden benches that they had in the shul. Kids are kids, people do these things. But I thought about it now as an adult, and I was wondering, not only did we violate as children maybe the Isser of Gezel, which we certainly were not allowed to do, we were stealing from the property of the shul and damaging its property, but also perhaps a prohibition of Lo Sasun Kein L'Hashem Elokeichem. It's something that we need to be concerned about. It's something we need to think about as well. The Rishonim have a discussion as well, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes it from the Rishonim. Where do we make the entrance to a Beis HaKnesses? The Shulchan Aruch says the entrance is always supposed to be Ein poschin Pesach Beis HaKnesses ela keneged hatzad shemispalim bo ba'osa ha'ir. If we have our shuls are facing Mizrach, so then the entrance to the Beis HaKnesses is supposed to be from the opposite direction. Where does such an idea come from? Why would it bother anyone if the entrance was from a different way? Wouldn't disturb anybody if we had an entrance on the other side of the shul. Why would it bother us? And the Rishonim explained the reason why is because this is patterned off of the way the Beis HaMikdash was built. This is patterned off of the way we entered into the Beis HaMikdash. The same way we entered in one entrance, and that was the way toward the Avoda, toward the way all the service was performed, so too this is the way we have our perspective when it comes to entering a Beis HaKnesses as well. Pasuk tells us in Parsha Shoftim, Lo sita lecha ashera eitzel mizbach Hashem Elokecha. One is not allowed to plant, simply read, an ashera tree, which means a tree that is going to be used to serve Avodah Zarah. One is not allowed to plant such a thing near the Mizbeach of Hashem Elokecha. Now, this is a halacha that most of us probably don't spend much time thinking about because we don't know much about Avodah Zarah. I happened to be with my father a few weeks ago, and he gets all kinds of fascinating shilas that most of us probably never even would have thought about. Now, one fine afternoon, we're sitting together, and he gets a shila from someone in Teaneck that he has a shila about an asherah. And my father turns to me and he says, how could somebody have a shila about an asherah? When he says, where do I even look to find the answer to a shila about an asherah? Nobody really speaks about it. It turns out, yes, once in a blue moon you do have an asherah. What happened was, if I'm not mistaken, some religious Jew bought a home from a very religious non-Jew who, at the time that the non-Jew moved into the home 25 years ago, they planted a tree for the purposes of bowing down to this tree. So the tree was actually planted for the purpose of Avodah Zarah, and for 25 years this is what they did every day, bow down to the tree on the front lawn after it grew. And now this home was sold, and other people bought the home, Jewish people bought the home, and they realized they have an Asherah tree in the front yard. Whoever gets the opportunity to knock down an Asherah tree and destroy it. Well, this is something that took place just a couple of weeks ago. So we have a prohibition to plant an Asherah. But the Gemara tells us that not only do we assume it's an Asherah, the Sifri says, Minayin lenotea ilan. How do you know that somebody who plants in a tree and the intention is not at all for Avodah Zarah? But I come and I plant a tree, Bahar Abayis. How do I know that over below Saseh? How do I know that also is prohibited? What should be wrong with that? I'm trying to beautify the Har Abayis. I'm just trying to enhance how the Har Abayis is going to look aesthetically. Says the Sifri, absolutely not. That's off limits. You're not allowed to do that. Because the Pasuk says, Kol Eitz, which means no tree is allowed to be planted on the Har Abayis at all. And this is something that the Rambam follows as well. The Rambam brings this drasha and he says, I'm trying to enhance the beauty of the Har Abayis. I want people to have a pleasant experience when they come to visit. Why not have some grass and some trees? Says the Rambam, that is something that is prohibited and one will be punished with Malkus if they do so. So this is something that the Rambam quotes from, as we said, the Sifri. Now, the problem with that is, if we're going to say, like some Achronim assume, Rabbi Kiva Eger, one of the great Gedolei Achronim in the 1800s, quotes from Rabbi David Arama, one of the Kadmonim. He says that this applies not only to the Makom HaMikdash, not only are you not allowed to plant a tree by the Beis HaMikdash, but you're also not allowed to plant a tree by a Beis HaKnesses, which would put us all in a very uncomfortable position, because every shul we've ever visited has trees right outside. And not only that, there are poskim that take it even further. What about the fact that we have trees that are a part of the shul itself? I've never been to a shul that doesn't have a bima. I've never been to a shul that doesn't have a table, that doesn't have pews, that doesn't have all kinds of things that are screwed into the ground. And that, many achronim say, would also be a prohibition, would also be a violation of lo sita lacha asheri. You're not allowed to have any trees that are put, that are installed into the ground of the shul. And this is something that is discussed very widely by many of the gedolei achronim, and it's a fascinating discussion. Obviously, we have adopted the opinion that this is something we don't take so far, but my point of bringing this out is, in many different areas of halacha, in many different ways, we find that the Beis HaKnesses rules are governed by the rules that govern the Beis HaMikdash as well. Sometimes it's l'kula and sometimes it's l'chumra, but it means that our perspective of a Beis HaKnesses needs to be one of the Kedusha of a Beis HaMikdash as well. I see we're running out of time, so let's just close with the following. There's one more very surprising discussion that I saw in the Stechemet. A number of years ago I saw in the Stechemet, he's a very beautiful encyclopedic work. Reb Chizkio Chaim Medini wrote what anybody today would never be able to write, but he wrote it before the days of computers. It means it was all in his head, which is pretty amazing. So he writes in the Stechema that there was a major discussion that broke out about whether or not we're allowed to install heating systems or air conditioning systems into a shul. Now, why would there be any issue? Why would there be any problem with having a heating system running in a shul? What can be wrong with that? So this is something that the Stechemet discusses, and he says there were great Gedolim who had this question, and they weren't really sure. So the story goes that Rameir Shapiro, when he was asked to become the rabbi of Pietrukov, so Rameir Shapiro was more famously known as the founder of the Daf Yomi movement. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chachmei Lublin, which was a very prominent yeshiva. But Rameir Shapiro also was a rabbi of a community. He was the rabbi in Pietrukov. So when he became the rabbi, it was freezing cold, like every good story from Europe. It was always freezing cold. And they asked Rameir Shapiro, are we allowed to install a system that's going to be a heating system in the Beis HaKnesses? And he goes to the Charka of a Rebbe, who is one of the locals as well, and he asked him, is this something I'm allowed to do? Is this a setup? Are they coming to me to ask me because they're nervous? Because they know I'm a new rabbi? They want to ask me the question that they know I'm going to give the wrong answer to? What do they want from me? So they got into a discussion and they tried to prove it from the fact that it seems that there was no heating system in the Beis HaMikdash. And this was a point of discussion that Rameir Shapiro raised and many other Gedolim. Should we assume that the same way there seemed to be no heating element that was installed into the Beis HaMikdash, maybe we're not allowed to have that in a Beis HaKnesses either, which is a surprising discussion, but yet we find once again, and we find it in so many other ways, in so many other halachas as well, that a Beis HaKnesses needs to follow the rules very often of a Beis HaMikdash. And that is simply because nowadays that we have no Beis HaMikdash, the central focus of the Jewish people has to change and it has to become the Beis HaKnesses. This is all we have left. So yes, we are mispalel sheyibana Beis HaMikdash b'mehera b'yameinu, that we should have that ability to once again go to a Beis HaMikdash, v'sein chalkeinu b'sarasecha, and give us the opportunity to serve you once again the way we're supposed to, the way we were meant to have a relationship with you. But in the absence of that experience, in the absence of that opportunity, at least we still have the remnant of the Beis HaMikdash, which is the holy place of the Beis HaKnesses. And it behooves all of us to take upon ourselves that now that we have the opportunity to enter a Beis HaKnesses freely, as often as we would like, and connect ourselves with the Ribono Shel Olam, at least we should think about what that is supposed to mean to us. Let's resensitize ourselves during this period when we mourn the Beis HaMikdash. Let us at least use it as an uplifting moment. Let us use it as a moment to think about what is our relationship with our Batei Knesios. How do we think, how do we feel every time we enter our own Beis HaKnesses, and is that something that is parallel to the feelings we hope to have when we once again are ushered into the Beis HaMikdash? B'mehera v'yameinu.